Okay, I'm going to start with a little bit, hopefully, a little interactive session. Question. Two questions. From our participation in the Hare Krishna movement, when we're asked the question, what's the most important verse in the whole Bhagavad Gita? If we did a little survey, we'd probably get well over 90% saying the same verse. Now, the Sunnah, what's the verse?
The most important verse.
If you were asked the question, you're a Hare Krishna devotee, right? And you've read Bhagavad Gita, right? What's the most important verse in the whole Bhagavad Gita? The most outstanding.
The verse appears twice.
That's a good answer. Manmana Bhava Madhbhakto Madhyaji Mamnamaskuru. Very good. In addition to that verse, another verse. Most important. The whole Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to our scholars over here. Amrit. Most important verse in the whole Bhagavad Gita. It's his birthday today, 9th birthday. This is your birthday question. You're on the hot seat, the birthday seat. No. Bhagavad Gita. Huh? You don't read Bhagavad Gita? Oh, next year. Okay, anyone? Sarvadharma parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja aham samsara papevyo
mokshayami mahavishnu.
Okay. Now, next question. Before you started taking part in the Hare Krishna movement, those of you that had some working knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, if you were asked that same question, what's the most important verse in the whole Bhagavad Gita? What would you say? Raise your hand. Of course. Anyone have a different verse than that one?
No.
Do you know the verse? Nandasuna, you know the verse? Karman evadikaraste mahapaleshu kadachana. What chapter is it? Chapter 2, text 47. Okay, so we're going to speak about that verse. And I'm hoping to create a little controversy. And by creating some controversy, to create some discussion. So now you know what's coming up. During the Thanksgiving holiday, I was in Seattle, and one of the congregation members that I know from Washington, D.C. has a co-worker, at least works in the same company but is based in Seattle, and said, this man doesn't come to the temple very much, but I'm trying to encourage him to visit the temple, and while you're there, I've told him to come meet you. Can you spend a little time with him? Oh, this man wasn't shy at all. He was right away, you know, my name is such and such, and I know so and so in Washington, D.C., and he said, I should come and see you. And I have a question for you, sure. I've been reading one verse in Bhagavad Gita every day for 6 months, and I don't understand the verse. Which verse? Kalmanye parikaraste mahapaleshu kadachana. So, really? Yes, could you, while you're here, spend some time in one of the classes and speak about it? Sure. So that inspired me, along with the discussion that took part after the class, to have some other discussions with other devotees. And it's not just that verse, but what's the role of the jiva soul in activity? Kind of the discussion has turned around to be that topic. And, you know, one approach is a philosophical. What does Bhagavad Gita say? Or what does our Siddhanta say? And then, even far more inviting, is how do you apply it? not like, okay, that's what it says in Bhagavad Gita class, and then hum-de-dum-dum, you just do your life the same way. But to do your life according to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and where does that take you? It takes you in transcendence. You know, from doing things, to taking Krishna consciousness, taking Bhagavad Gita and everything that we do as a religion, and differently, taking it as a path of transcendence. Just listening last 2 days to Prabhupada's room discussion in Caracas, where I don't know the reason why, but the persons he was speaking with, they were in some way involved with the Catholic Church. I don't know if they were priests, but somehow or another, theologians, like university people or actual priests or whatever, something. But you know, they came from a Christian background, and Prabhupada, instead of saying God, was saying transcendence, like with a capital T, pursuing transcendence. And there was a lively discussion. But Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada was saying, is teaching a life of transcendence. So it's not just a religion. It's a life of transcendence. You know, living according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, where we know exactly, better than more or less, we know exactly who we are and who the transcendence with a capital T is, and what our relationship is while we're doing our everyday things, like the practical application part. Okay, so let's chant the verse together. I'm going to be discussing minimally 3 verses and referring to about 10 verses. It's like a little Bhagavad Gita summary here. Let's chant the verse together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Karmanye Varikaraste Apaleshu Kadachana Makarma Parahito Bho Vet Mate Sangostva Karmani. Translation: you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are 3 considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. Do a little vocabulary class for our young scholars over there in the corner. Does any one of you know what the word capricious means? Capricious? Some of you are shaking your head no, some of you are pulling on your chin. But I didn't hear the answer. Okay, this is a new vocabulary word for you. Capricious. You know what whimsical means? Whimsical. Kind of. Okay, what's the kind of meaning? Capricious, whimsical.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't know what it
means. Okay. Prabhupada gives a meaning in terms of scripture, what it means. It's not authorized by scripture. That's capricious work. But when you say somebody does something whimsically or capriciously, a literary term is willy-nilly. There's no meaning. There's no purpose. It's silly. It's meaningless. It's a foolish activity, whimsical, foolish activity. Capricious. Okay. So now you have a new, there's several vocabulary words here. See if you can. You don't have the most attentive bunch this evening. Let's see. Maybe we'll just skip it. Okay. There are three considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. Prescribed duties are activities enjoined in terms of one's acquired modes of material nature. Capricious work means actions without the sanctions of authority, and inaction means not performing one's prescribed duties. The Lord advised that Arjuna not be inactive, but that he perform his prescribed duty without being attached to the result. One who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. Remember that sentence, we'll come back to it. I'll read it again. One who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. Thus he is the enjoyer or sufferer of the result of such actions. Paragraph. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. Routine work, performed as an obligation in terms of the scriptural injunctions without desire for results, is action in the mode of goodness. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage. Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested, obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. Paragraph. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. So, in the verse, the word is there, adhikar. That's a Sanskrit word. So, is it, there's also a Hindi word like that? What does it mean in Hindi? Or, you know, the Hindi word means in English?
Right.
Does it mean something in addition, other meanings, if you were to translate into English? Because the common way the Prabhupada has translated that is qualification. If you have if you're qualified as a lawyer or a doctor or a car mechanic or something, then you have a right to perform surgery or to represent somebody in a courtroom or to fix somebody's car. But if you don't have the qualification, you don't have the right to perform surgery or represent somebody in a courtroom or fix somebody's car. Qualification establishes one's right. You're entitled, and then so I looked up the commentaries of our acharyas, and they speak this way: one can be attached to the performance of duty, but then after that comes three nots. Mean do not. One time, very early in the movement, a devotee had asked Srila Prabhupada, they were being trained as an artist, and they asked Prabhupada, is it okay to be attached to your service? And Prabhupada said, yes, you can be attached to your service. That's assigned to you by your spiritual master. And when your spiritual master assigns you another service, then be attached to that other service. So the attachment goes to the instruction of the spiritual master, not to the particular form that that instruction takes. Be attached to the instruction of the spiritual master. So you have the qualification, specifically in the purport, Prabhupada is speaking of prescribed duties is according to the modes of nature that one has acquired, guna and karma. Then there's some duty, some natural activity that one will perform according to the modes of nature. And it's one of the duties of a teacher. It's a primary duty of a teacher is to see the nature of the individual and according to the nature of the individual to guide them how to connect according to their nature but also to elevate themselves in the modes of nature. In Bhishma Dev's instructions, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Bhishma Dev is being asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj, can you please describe the duties of a king? So the duties of the king is to see that everybody has the proper engagement. So he also needs to know what is one's guna and karma, what is one's natural position, and according to one's natural position, that one has something to do. There's no lazy people on welfare in Maharaj Yudhisthira's kingdom. No such thing. Everyone has some duty, whatever that is. And then he describes this very interesting thing of counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment, which is almost like whiplash or something. What's that? When a young child is entrusted to a teacher, to a guru, in the classic sense, he's now 5 years old and he goes to the ashram of the guru. And what does the guru teach? The guru teaches the same thing to all the children that are his students: character. And certain elements of character are classic, like respect and obedience and detachment and all things that one acquires is the property of the guru, so that one grows up, everything that I acquire is the property of God. Every time, I can't recall ever hearing Prabhupada speak about the classic system of education that he didn't give this example, because it's right in the scripture, but he would say it over and over again. Didn't explain it, just said it over and over again. When you hear those things that Prabhupada says over and over again, pay attention, because there's something important there. There's a reason why he's saying it over and over again. So the child would go on behalf of the spiritual master and beg alms. And any small boy that comes to someone's home and says he's trained to see every woman as mother. That's another one. So Mataji, may I have some alms from my guru? And he opens his cloth. Any Mataji is going to look at a little boy and say, sure, here's some grain, here's something. Here's some roti and something. Just natural. Here's a little. So, and the little boy, when he goes back to the ashram, what does he do? He gives to his guru, because it's the property of the guru. And what does the guru do? He gives to his wife, and she makes an offering and offers to the deity, and then the guru calls the boys to come and take their meal. And Prabhupada would say, almost every time, and if the guru fails to call the student one day, the boy will fast. Meaning, there's the real breaking point. It's not, I'm doing this for my sense gratification, I'm doing this for my guru. And if he calls, then I come. And if he doesn't call, I don't come. I fast. until he calls. Of course, the guru isn't going to forget, but the principle that he's taught is it's the property of the guru. So that when he's a grown up, he sees everything that he earns as a householder as the property of God. It's not mine. It's not a dovetail. It's the property of God. And every woman, I was trained since childhood, every woman is mother, except my wife, and she's my wife. But every other woman, doesn't matter, sister, little girl, old lady, she's to me, she's mother, and I'm taught respect, along with respect to guru, then those other principles. The cow, women, children, the elderly, and the brahmanas. So culture is universally taught. And after some time of associating with the child, the teacher sees two things. One, what is their propensity? And if he's a qualified teacher, he gives them the training how to fulfill that propensity. Some may be, one may be more musical, one may be more visual, one may be more mechanical. And according to their propensity, they'll give training so that they'll have something that they can do as an adult. Based at first is character. And then their skill. And then side by side is, are they attached or are they detached? And depending upon attached or detached, they may continue counteraction by detachment as brahmacharis. Just say brahmachari. Or, if there's a tendency to be attached, counteraction by attachment. To be engaged under regulation in grihastha ashram, brahmachari ashram. Continued or grihastha ashram, and then their varna. And that's a teacher. It's one teacher for the whole life of the child, along with the parents for the life of the child. And the teacher may assign someone to another teacher because the student has some special qualification. They'd like to see that special qualification nurtured by someone with some special teaching ability. There's so many examples of that. So, if one has the, according to one's guna and karma, one has the adhikar, one has the right to perform your duty. And then comes three do nots. And since I don't know Hindi or Sanskrit, and like any of you might, it's a nice perspective to learn Sanskrit words, because like it's a whole new world. So what's the meaning? There they go. Nandasuno. What's the meaning of maya?
Like.
Maya means?
What you know.
Yeah. There's two syllables, ma and ya. Right? What do they mean? What does ma mean? Ma. Not mother. No. M-A, long A. Ma.
I don't know.
Okay. Ma means not. Not, and this is from Prabhupada, ya means this. It's illusion, it's not this. So, in the verse, ma phaleshu kadachida, ma karma phalahetu bor, ma te sangos karmani. Not this, not this, not this. And each of them, ma phaleshu kadachina, phala means fruit. You're not entitled to the fruits. You have the adhikar for the work, prescribed duty, but you don't have the right, you don't have the, it's not, you're not entitled to the pala of the prescribed duty. Nor consider yourself to be the pala hetu, the cause of the fruit. Nor never be sangha. In this case, Prabhupada is translating this as attached. attached to not performing your prescribed duty. So there's three. One yes and three no's. You're entitled. You have the right. You have the adhikar. You have the qualification. Perform prescribed duty. You're not entitled to the fruit of the prescribed duty. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the fruit, and never be attached to non-performance of duty. So that's chapter 2, text 47. Text 47, this second half, the final section of chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita is about Buddhi Yoga. We had more time, I'd go into it differently, but the first part is continuing chapter 1, summarizing, you know, Arjuna's, all of his good reasons why he doesn't want to fight. And then he gets bewildered and says, I surrender. Please instruct me. Then Krishna presents Sankhya. Sankhya is, before we speak about what your duty is, let's speak about who you are. Then we can speak about what your duty is. Who are you? You're in the category of spirit. You're not in the category of matter. Let's distinguish. This is intelligence. To discern this from that. Discrimination, in the right sense of the term. To tell this from that. One thing from another thing. The soul is distinct from the covering of the soul, and you're the soul. In so many ways, making the distinction. Then the final section is Bhuti. Okay, now that you understand that you're soul, now go into the field of life and keep that right in the front of your consciousness. Now how to do that? That's the application part that separates the men from the boys, or the devotees from the, you know, bewildered. That will help us reach, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, the path of transcendence. Working in the consciousness, involving yourself with matter in the consciousness that you're spirit soul. And that requires buddhi, that requires spiritual intelligence. And this is one of those explanations of what buddhi is. The preliminary is buddhi is where yavasayatmika buddhir ekeha puranandana. There's one focus in everything that you do. And that one focus in everything that you do is, it's for Krishna. As spirit soul, I'm connected to the supreme spirit soul. There's all this field of material energy around. That's part of Krishna's energy too. I'm meant to utilize that in service to Krishna. One focus. Diversity, but there's unity in the midst of all that diversity. Very focused. And one of the things that helps us lose focus is attachment to fruitive work, called the mode of passion. It covers, or it diminishes, the influence of goodness. So to promote the quality of goodness, to get to the path of transcendence, we have to perform a prescribed duty, but let go of passion and ignorance. So they take forms. Attachment to be the enjoyer of the fruit. No. Attachment to thinking that you're the cause of the fruit, which it then entitles you to be the enjoyer of the fruit. No. Nor be attached to inaction. No. There's one thing. Be attached to the under the instruction of the spiritual master, like Prabhupada was saying to this artist. When assigned by the spiritual master, the spiritual master, like the teacher I described, the guru, recognizes the quality of the student and gives service according to the quality of the student, but it's submission to the spiritual master's instruction, not just doing things that I like. It's submission to the instruction of the spiritual master, which means submission to Krishna. Because the spiritual master, if I got my understanding of Bhagavad Gita straight, I understand that my spiritual master's instruction is Krishna's instruction to me. He's the medium, the external manifestation of Super Soul instructing me to do this. Then he says, do this, do this. And if I, and then he says, no, do that, then I do that. You get the idea. So it's the connection to the Supreme Lord that you're entitled to that, but not the other things. Now, let's go to chapter 5. And what's chapter 5? It's Karma Yoga Action and Krishna Consciousness. And there's another set of three do-nots in chapter 5, text 14. Who knows that verse? Nakard Prithvam Nakarmani Lokishas Srijate Prabhu. What Krishna says, I'll just do it quickly. Never consider yourself to be the cause of work. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the fruits of work. And never consider yourself to be inducing others to work. Although our common language is all three of those things. All the time. And Krishna is saying, no, no, and no. And then he says, rather, it's everything is being carried out by Prakriti. So Prakriti is like a yantra, a machine. And we're seated on the yantra, yantra rudhani, mayaya, made of Krishna's external energy. And we're just going along for the ride. And the machine of material nature is doing the work, is causing the results of the work, and is inducing others to work, including us, to work, and the results of the work. It's all being carried out by material nature. So then, now the question that I said we would discuss, and then we'll get to the controversy part. Mm-hmm. Chapter 18, text 14, is where Krishna says there are five factors to action. I read the verse. Adishtanam, the place. Karta, the door, or worker. Karam, the instruments. Vividhas chapatak cheshta, different types of cheshta, endeavor. And ultimately, Super Soul. There's the five. The place of action, this is the translation. In brackets, Prabhupada has put the body. The place of action. The performer, the various senses. In many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the Super Soul. These are the five factors of action. Purport. The word adhishthanam refers to the body. The soul within the body is acting to bring about the results of activity and is therefore known as karta, the doer. That the soul is the knower and the doer is stated in the Shruti. He gives two quotes from Prashna Upanishad and Vedanta Sutra, two places. Doesn't give the translation, just gives the Sanskrit, but it's confirming the soul is the doer and the knower. The instruments of action are the senses, and by the senses the soul acts in various ways. For each and every action there is a different endeavor, but all one's activities depend on the will of the Supreme Soul, the Super Soul, who is seated within the heart as a friend. Supreme Lord is the super cause, one word. Under these circumstances, he was acting in Krishna consciousness, under the direction of the super soul, situated within the heart, is naturally not bound by any activity. Liberation. Those in complete Krishna consciousness are not ultimately responsible for their actions. Everything is dependent on the supreme will, the super soul, the supreme personality, Godhead. So, cheshta. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I looked up the words cheshta in folio, you know, word search. And commonly, it means doing, like action.
Endeavor.
That's how it's translated here. Now, there's a school of thought. This is the controversy part. There's a school of thought that says the spirit soul is totally separate from the material elements. It's another category altogether. There's five and there's three, there's eight, five gross, three subtle material elements. The soul is completely separate. So in what way does the soul have anything to do with matter? One thing we know what the soul does is the soul desires. The soul desires happiness. The soul is part of the supreme soul. Anandamayo vyasat. The soul, the supreme soul, is the source of all pleasure. So what do souls do? They desire happiness. That's what they do. That's their role in activity. They desire happiness. I was having a discussion with one sannyasi that was staying like this, and then another person was saying, yeah, he's right, and, you know, we had a lively discussion about, so we're desiring, Krishna detects our desire, and then from that desire to enjoy separately from Krishna comes a series of other desires and desires and desires, and according to those desires, the external energy, prakriti, maya, assumes some form, and then the next thing you know, things are happening. You got activity. But what does the soul do? The soul just desires. Vas. Then there's another school that says, wait a minute, here's this word, cheshta. It says endeavor. And it's one of the five factors of action. Supposing I can just sit in my room somewhere or something and say, I desire to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And that's all I have to do. I don't do anything. And then, you know, the other side says, no, no, no. There's a series of other desires, and just go on desiring and desiring, and Krishna reciprocates with those desires, and stuff starts to happen. And then, the other side says, well, wait a minute, no. I don't just, desire is nice, it's from desire comes other things. Desire is concomitant with the soul. We can't make desire zero, that's silly. But then from desire comes what? It's a fifth element here, because one of the five is karta. So the soul is animating matter. Without the soul animating matter, it's dead matter. Or when the soul leaves, the matter disintegrates. It's the integrating factor, because the soul is para prakriti and the other is apara prakriti. But now, does the soul have to do something? Like endeavor. And is the endeavor just desire? Or is the endeavor something more active and positive? So just to go along this argument path a little bit, there are verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explicitly says the soul does not act. maybe you know, those of you who are well-read in Bhagavad Gita know where those are, but the same root word, but besides the cheshta word that's used in this 18th chapter, there's another word, karoti. Naiva kinchit karoti sa. The soul is not causing action. Says it in the fourth chapter, says it again in the fifth chapter, almost the same thing. Naiva kinchit karomi. So there's legitimacy in this point of view that says the soul just desires, the soul doesn't act. The soul is of a spiritual quality, para prakriti, distinct from apara prakriti. And so what does the soul do in relation to apara prakriti? He doesn't act. He's not part of the material energy. The material energy is conducting everything, right? So what does the soul do? There is some legitimacy in that point of view. On the other hand, not like Krishna's double talking, but on the other hand, there are verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna specifically uses the very same word, yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat. Whatever it is that you do, you're doing something. So the soul is active, but the soul is, some, there are verses that speak in that way, the soul is doing things. And there are verses in Bhagavad Gita where the soul doesn't do anything as far as activity is concerned. So, hey, you know, that's an interesting philosophical blah blah. And then at the end of the day, what does that have to do with my life? Part of self-realization or becoming Krishna conscious is to be conscious of what's going on. When we're doing stuff, what's going on? You could just, you know, be religious and do the do's and don't do the don'ts and you know, don't worry so much about being conscious of Krishna. As you've heard me say this, because I remember here in Detroit saying it twice already, we're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So our mandate, our goal is to be conscious of Krishna. So what's our relationship with Krishna while we're doing everyday things of life? What's going on? You don't have to be, you know, a scientist or a great philosopher and scholar, but having a basic idea of what's going on is important. You know, the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, there's Prakriti, there's the living entity, there's God, there's time, there's karma. So, you know, we should know those things. So when karma is happening, we're entitled to perform our prescribed duty. But material nature is making the thing happen, and material nature is causing the results. And what is it we're doing? Where should our consciousness be? What should our understanding be of who we are and what we're doing? What's our role in all of this? Just desire? And you know, it was a serious discussion. A thoughtful sannyasi was presenting this idea, and I keep saying, you know, he was expressing, I think this verse, 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, isn't so well understood. It's a very short purport, and so on. You know, people just skip over it, kind of, because it's like it's tricky. Anyway, so I'm going to spend some more time with some other learned personalities and cover this. So here I'll just give two more on the, you know, on the two sides. Rupa Goswami, we all know the story. There's a beautiful painting. He's sitting under a tree at Tirukadamba writing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and it's his Sanatana Goswami's birthday, and he wishes to do something for Sanatana Goswami. He just has the desire. And what happens? Down the road comes this village girl. No, it's Srimati Radharani. And she brings all the ingredients for sweet rice for Sanatana Goswami. What did he do? He just desired. And then on the other side, here's Mother Jasoda, and she's trying to bind Krishna. We sing about it for a whole month, every year. She's trying to bind Krishna with rope. And the rope doesn't go around Krishna's waist. So she gets more rope. And she tries to put the rope around Krishna's waist, and it doesn't go around, it's 2 inches too short, more rope, and it's 2 inches too short. Then suddenly she's able to bind Krishna. Why? She was making some endeavor. There's another Sanskrit word is prayasa, endeavor, effort. It's something that we need to do, but our effort alone isn't sufficient. Then Krishna exhibited his kripa shakti and she was able to bind Krishna. So do we just desire or do we make some endeavor? Or is our endeavor nothing but a big desire? Is it active? So who would like to enlighten us on this subject? Or offer your learned opinion? Yes.
It's just personal experience. Very rarely just out of my desire things happen. I always have had to work, so how do I understand? Like, I don't remember a time when I desired and things happened. I had desire and then I had to work on it.
So yes.
At least in practical understanding, it makes more sense that desire is not
sufficient. Like there's a mathematical term, necessary but not sufficient. Something like that. Any other participatory comments, please? Oh, thoughtful moments here in the Detroit congregation. Anyone like to say something? Any suggestion? Where do we go with this? Not very important topic. We'll just scrap it and have kirtan, right? Yes.
So we show our desire through our endeavor. That's how we show that we have a strong desire. If we want to achieve something, we show it to Krishna through our endeavor that I am endeavoring because I have a strong desire. If we have a strong desire, it impulse comes to endeavor immediately. But again, we're saying it's not sufficient. That doesn't guarantee anything.
Okay. Because there's ultimately the super soul.
Yes.
We can endeavor and endeavor and endeavor and endeavor. If something isn't sanctioned, it's not going to happen.
Yes.
King Chuchiketu. 100,000 wives. He passed Krishna.
And the other thing is, the soul in itself is, yeah, it desires, it's only desires. But the false ego is the connector in between. False ego connects it to this word of action where it assumes its identity and then we start acting. Exactly.
Yes. There's, just on that note, there's 24, there's a system in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, of 8 separated elements. You read carefully, not casually, but carefully, in chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, and you'll find the same 24 elements that Kapila Dev speaks about in the third canto of Bhagavatam. So whether it's the 8 or the 24, there are material energies, and one of those material energies certainly is false ego. There's another, and that's Chaita. That's 24. So here's the 23. When Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, With his glance goes the living entities and the time energy, Kala Shakti. The jivas and Kala Shakti. And combination of the jivas and Kala Shakti agitate the undifferentiated totality of material energy, and the elements then start to separate out. And the first one that separates out is false ego, our dear friend. And then when false ego begins interacting with the modes, other elements separate out. The mode of goodness, the mind separates. The mode of passion, material intelligence separates. The mode of ignorance, then it gets a whole lot because it's the mode of ignorance. The five gross elements, the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses. Five, 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 five. Four times five is 20. Plus mind, intelligence, and false ego. 23. What's 24? Cheta. So, cheta is translated differently by Śrīla Prabhupāda in the word for word in the third canto. In some places, it's contaminated consciousness. Well, consciousness is pure like the soul is. And for what is contaminated consciousness, is contaminated with ideas for separate enjoyment, desire for separate enjoyment, contaminated consciousness. Another translation is given in the third canto is matapa, like the big warehouse, the sum total of everything else. So either through false ego or contaminated consciousness, the soul connects with matter, although it has nothing to do with matter. Through false ego or contaminated consciousness, the subtlest, it connects with the grosser forms of matter. And super soul oversees maya adhyakshina prakriti. But it's more than just desire, it's this other prayasa or cheshta. It's some endeavor. Someone else had their hand up. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In my experience, sometimes for some desires just appears and there's a little bit of endeavor and things start falling in place. So sometimes I think, is it something like to do with karma or something, that it was written or something, and that's why somehow I desired and things started falling in places? Because it doesn't happen every time, though.
Well, life is variegated, isn't it? from the third canto and fourth canto, there's very clear explanation. Once by Kapila, another place by Narada Muni, where desire that arises comes from activity in a previous condition of life, either previous life or this life previously, where a karma is done, an activity is done, some sense perception is stored in the mind in a subtle manner and comes out later as a desire. It's stored desire based upon a previous activity or sense perception during activity. And it comes out as a desire. And then we can act upon those desires in different ways, like just ignore them or get absorbed in them or become happy or sad by them or something. And then, yes, it's karma is the source of the desire, but whether the things fall together or not, there's a desire, and then suddenly things start to happen. That doesn't always happen like that, but it looks like, oh, it was destined to happen. That's why the desire was there and the things started configuring the way they configured. It's ultimately managed by or overseen by Supersoul. That you may have a desire that's never fulfilled, King Chitraketu. You may have a desire that's just a desire and suddenly it's just getting fulfilled. It's Supersoul overseeing the whole show. It's so our training is to see Krishna in the whole show. If Krishna so desires, not Krishna, please make it happen. But if Krishna so desires, and even something that's very obvious that Krishna desires, that sees, it may seem like this. Here's a way that Prabhupada trained us. Some of you probably have heard this one. When Prabhupada became ill, he taught us that we could have kirtan in the temple and then offer a prayer to Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please restore the health of Srila Prabhupada so they can continue to guide us in our Krishna consciousness. And maybe some of you have visited the Los Angeles temple, and when you attend Mangalarti, just stick around a little bit and you'll hear Savas lead the prayer, my dear Rukmini Dwarkadish, if you so desire, please send us new devotees so we can increase the book distribution of Srila Prabhupada throughout the whole of our yatra every morning, based upon that training that Prabhupada gave. So, you know, a sincere prayer is an expression of a desire. Now, so your question was specifically, I'm going a little bit beyond the scope of your question, but your question is, if some desire arises, is that karma? Yes. And if things fall into place or don't fall into place, is that karma? Well, it's overseen by Supersoul. Because there's many factors. One's the desire. There's a the metaphor that Narada uses is in the bottom of a lake there's some mud. In the mud there's some organic material that's decomposing and some bubbles are forming. Carbon dioxide gas is forming. And it makes him pressure and pressure and pressure until finally the bubble, the gas protrudes through the mud and starts wiggling its way up to the surface of the water. And it hovers on the surface of the water for some time and then, boop, it merges with the air. Because that's where it belongs. Not in the water or in the mud. But desire is like that. If we can value it because it's my desire. Or we can be detached from it. Just let it go. It doesn't have any more meaning than bubbles in a pond. Like when we're chanting, here's what happens when you're not a devotee and you don't chant. Those things that you did in this life or previous lives, plural, are stored. It's like the organic material in the bottom of the mud of the lake. And after some time, tick, 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 time energy is moving, and the desire comes out. So if you're not a devotee, wow, look at that, there's that desire. And you meditate on the desire, the mind goes to the desire, and it becomes, your life. Your desires rule your life. And there's, whether it's religious or irreligious, it's a desire. And it rules my life. And then maybe somebody's religious, those I can't act on, and only these can I act on. So it's driven by desire. And then some persons say, oh, it's terrible, it's become desireless. Become an impersonalist and try to become desireless. So how one addresses the desire determines how you lead your life. So with the teaching that Prabhupada has given from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and over again, our desire, our objective is to make our desire to please Krishna. Yeah, so that's I was using the phrase dovetail because it's a phrase that Bhaktisiddhanta uses, dovetail. I have a desire. Is this something that I can offer to Krishna? Yes, it's something. So I'll do it and I'll offer to Krishna. the dovetail. But then we're, you know, is our attachment to Krishna or is our attachment to our desire? It's just, oh, how convenient, it matches something that's nice for Krishna. The goal is to become attached to Krishna. Make our desire to please Krishna. So, religious, I'm using this term in a, you know, say it's karma yoga, or religious, is I should be nice because that's what a religious person does. But the real thing is, commonly, I feel good. There's a certain, we all know what the feeling is of doing something that's an act of compassion for others. You sacrifice for others. You feel something. It's a mode of goodness, happiness. And one who cultivates the mode of goodness, happiness, commonly and largely, it's about my happiness. And I get some sense of pride in I give of myself to others. Out of my largesse, I have something and I give something to somebody who doesn't have something because I'm a good person. It's not crude, it's just a fact. It's how most of the world moves. It's self-centered. The false ego drive. So there's a mode of goodness kind of policy, happiness and the mode of goodness. Transcendence is something else. And what Bhagavad Gita is training us in or directing us in is transcendence, becoming attached to Krishna. And these verses, they're more than clues, they're cornerstones, they're foundation stones of how to enter into transcendence. Yes.
Thank you very much for the wonderful controversy you brought up.
Well, we had a really lively discussion about a week ago. We took the gloves off and it was going at it.
So I was thinking what I should support, the new side or the left side.
They both have their place.
Yes, ma'am. But the thing that came to my mind was, you know, when he brought out false ego, prakriti krimanani gune karmansa saham karmodatma kartam iti manate. Then I remembered an example a couple of years somebody quoted. So the bull and the farmer's son, the bull is huge, but the farmer keeps his 5-year-old son. So farmer knows the weakness of the bull, keeps a rope to the nose. So when he has to turn the bull cart left, the farmer's son puts the rope right hand side. The bull feels a small pain, so turns left. So bull is thinking, I am on my own turning left. But bull doesn't know somebody is driving. Likewise, three modes, they work in such a wonderful way. For example, we are thinking I'm moving the hand, but if paralysis comes, my hand doesn't move. So three modes of mental nature facilitate your desire. And connection to this seventh canto, matter is dead, matter cannot enjoy. Soul is pure, soul has got nothing to do. So when we are enjoying the sensual pleasure, who is enjoying? Soul is pure, doesn't need to enjoy anything with matter. And matter cannot enjoy because matter is dead, then who is enjoying? So one kind of explains, is false ego. So by these two examples, I tend to stay towards the desire, keep on desiring, and of course you said the prayers and the Yamaneshwara thing, but still these are the two examples that I felt I'm turning towards more desire, and three months will be facilitating, okay? That's what I think.
Support, and then I'll say something counter. Depending upon, like many things in life, depending upon how you view something, you'll see something and you say something about what you see, and it's not wrong, it's right. And then, yet at the same time, someone else sees the same thing from a different vantage point, and according to their vantage point, they say something is not wrong, it's also right. So both have their place, where like Krishna is saying, going back to this other, directly from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying the soul isn't doing anything. So if it's not doing anything, how is it the karta? How is it the performer? Well, it's desiring it in the modes of nature. So like those examples that you gave, if the hand is paralyzed, I can have the desire to move my hand, but the hand is paralyzed, it won't move. So what can I do? That's the sanction of the Supreme. So now the other side. The sanction of the Supreme Lord is there. But if without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, then the hand is paralyzed, or given the example of the bull, if the 5-year-old boy pulls the rope on one side, the bull is thinking, he's making the decision to move, but it's actually being directed by someone else. You know, the bull could just turn around and take his horns and chop the little boy in little pieces and not turn at all. And that's the modes of nature too. It's not like the first response here. If all that my role is in activity is desire. Let's say Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and before him Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they desired to spread Krishna consciousness around the world. And different, would we say that Prabhupada's desire was greater than Bhaktisiddhanta and greater than Bhaktivinoda Thakur? I wouldn't want to say that. And therefore, because the desire was greater, it happened, and otherwise it didn't happen. Or was there something that was unique about what Prabhupada did? And Bhaktisiddhanta, from his position as the head of the Gaudiya Math, also did. He sent some people to England, and it was a big production, big fanfare, and so forth. Practical experience, as we already heard, things don't happen just by desiring they happen. There's some endeavor. From our practical experience, there's some endeavor. Even the little boy pulling the rope. Or Prasanna Maharaj was describing to me, he had trained not just oxen, but there were some either horses or mules or something, that when he would say, ghee and ha, I don't know which one is left and right, he'd pull the rope and say, so it got to the point where he could stand at the fence and say, ghee and ha, and they would go and stop and turn around and go down the row, and he just standing at the fence. He didn't have to pull the rope. He just gave the command. And he trained them to go up and down and, plow the field. But so there was some endeavor, although he wasn't pulling the rope. So there's some endeavor that's required, more than just a desire. I mean, I was using this expression. A desire is like just a star twinkling in the sky. I desire. Then endeavor is a further stage of certainly desire, because it's concomitant with the soul is there, and so I desire something. Then I make some endeavor to do according to the intelligence that Krishna gives through the medium in material life, through the medium of false ego. I desire some ice cream or something. You go get some ice cream. Make some endeavor. So in pure devotion, like Mother Jasoda, just to serve her son, Krishna. Or that there's something, and certainly by the agency of the internal potency, Krishna makes all arrangements, even for Mother Jasoda, Divine Krishna, for Radharani to bring the sweet rice to Sanatana Goswami's birthday. Something, so anything, anyone else want to add something to this discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thanks for bringing up this wonderful topic. I'm just paraphrasing all the points that you made so far. In the there are two important points. One is Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. So the soul's inherent nature is to desire. Just like the nature of fire is to burn, the soul's inherent nature is to desire. But it acts in two different ways, in the conditioned state and the liberated state.
Yes.
So in the conditioned state, in the Baddha situation, there are three duyas coming into play. So Krishna very, very nicely puts it in the 13th chapter, Karya Karana Kartritve, Prakriti Hetra Uchite, Purushaha Sukha Dukhana, Bhoktritve Hetra Uchite. So there he mentions two duyas. One is the soul who is acting in the conditioned state according to the impulse of the mode of the material nature. And in the next verse, he says about the Paramatma as Upadrishta and Anumanta. Mm-hmm. One is overseeing and one who is sanctioning. So he clearly mentions the three doers coming to play in the action. And this is also very nicely mentioned by Ramanujacharya in Tattva Muktavali. He talks about three causes for any action. One is the Nimitta Karana, the instrumental doer, and the Upadana Karana, and Sahakari Karana. So these three causes are there in each and every action and the results. And that's in the conditioned state, but in the liberated state, or rather in the sadhana state, where a sadhaka is practicing. So in that state, both the Ichha Shakti and the Kriya, both are very prominently important, equally important. So if you take the extreme state of just the Ichha, so that is like in the two schools of thought, even in the Vishishtadvaita philosophy. One is the Vanara Nyaya, other is the Matata
Nyaya. We're losing the sound. What happened? Batteries dying?
It's really cold for me, so...
No, I think it's the battery.
So in the Markata Nyaya, or the cat philosophy, so the mother cat, it takes care of the kitten. So it doesn't have to do anything. It just has to be there, and the mother takes care of the kitten. So
then there's another school that says...
The other school is the monkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but in the sadhana state, it has to be... At least our acharyas described this... It's a combination of both. So we need the...
Yes.
Our own endeavor.
Yes. Yes.
We need the mercy of the Lord.
Yes.
So both are required to progress in the process. Please add some more light on this. What's going on?
So I'd be interested to read Ramanujacharya's commentary on the distinction between these Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti, because I'm accustomed to hearing Ichha Shakti applied to the personality of Godhead. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the Damodar Leela, one of the two energies that Krishna was exhibiting that prevented Mother Yashoda from binding him was Ichha Shakti, and the other was Swarup Shakti. Because it was, he wanted to go back to the storeroom and get more butter. He didn't want to be bound up by Mother Yashoda. So she wasn't able to bind him because he was exhibiting his Ichha Shakti. So, that and other applications, the Ishvara has desire. The living entity is part and parcel. So, it would make sense, part and parcel also has Ichha Shakti as part of the Supreme. But I'm accustomed to hearing it in terms of the Supreme Lord as having Ichha Shakti. So if you could find that reference where Ramanujacharya speaks of living entity, Kriya Shakti, Ichha Shakti, I'd be interested. Because it's the same. It's the same for Krishna. Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, he describes Chatur Varnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagavasha. He's created the system, and then he says, but yet I'm the non-doer. I did it, but I didn't do it. Meaning he does it through the agency of his potencies. And same, these references, if one wanted to make a case for the soul doesn't do anything, one can make a case. Because there are verses that indicate like that. And then there are verses that indicate the soul is the doer. So both have their place from the proper vantage point. So then, you know, the right question isn't which is it, or is Krishna contradicting himself? It's how do we understand what our role is? And so this role of making some endeavor. So the practical, we have this little saying in book distribution, the endeavor is the perfection. When you do book distribution, you'll understand about that one. You go door to door, you go person after person, and everyone says no. Some days, it's everybody says yes. And some days, it's everybody says no. Or, yes, it's too many no's. So, what's the happiness if you're fruitive? You get discouraged. You don't want to do this anymore. It's not fun. Because you're not getting the result. But to continue is, the endeavor is the perfection. It's striving to please the spiritual master. Or as Prabhupada said, even if I was, when he was in America, in New York City, for a whole year, and nothing was happening. He wasn't discouraged because he knew he was fulfilling the order. He was carrying out the order of a spiritual master. That was his happiness. He was risking everything, risking his life, risking his health, risking everything to carry out the order, and that's happiness. And then Krishna, like Mother Yashoda trying to bind Krishna, Krishna reciprocated and voila, the Hare Krishna movement began. But that's his Kripa Shakti. Krishna withdrew other potencies and gave that one a special one. So it became wonderful. How can we, the application point is several. How to not be, there's philosophically and practically, fruitive tendency is pernicious. It doesn't want to go away. It's terrible. It's like a stain, and it not only looks bad, it smells bad, and like it contaminates everything. And we carry it with us into the realm of devotional service, and it makes difficulty for ourselves and people that have anything to do with us because of our fruitive tendency. It's not pure. In an arena where we want purity and we like to see purity, and then we see this other thing. So it's very troublesome. And it helps to understand chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita. What's going on here? What am I doing wrong? how am I not applying myself to the process of devotional service properly? We're attached to thinking we're the cause of the result. We're attached to being the enjoyer of the result. We're attached to thinking we're going to get others to do something. When Krishna says, don't think like that. Like, you know, if we learned the verse, but when in when one ear and out the other. How do we apply ourselves properly is become attached to transcendence and become attached to the duty that's assigned to us and just elevate ourselves a little bit in the quality of goodness and do like that, regardless of anything else. Because this is purifying. And then in that state of purifying, then instead of attachment to the result or the sense of getting things done or something like that, it's attachment to the instruction and attachment to the goal of the instruction, attachment to Krishna, progressively. And that's liberating. It's the path of liberation, and it's liberating. There's such freedom. And consciousness becomes clearer, and our, you know, things that spoil relationships diminish, caused by our own contamination. You know, it's an individual issue, and then it comes to a collective issue. Becoming free from the stain of fruitive attachment, and becoming instead situated in Buddha Yoga. Buddha Yoga being interchangeable with Bhakti Yoga. Just working for Krishna. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Working exclusively for Krishna. And when Krishna gives that Buddhi, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yinamama Piyantite. How we can come to Krishna. Krishna gives that. One who strives like that, Krishna gives that. We strive for transcendence. What inspired me to speak about this, besides the other discussion the other day, was this conversation I was hearing this morning with Prabhupada speaking with these last few days with these Christian people in Caracas. Transcendence. Strive to reach transcendence. It's natural for us. So they were asking, what is transcendence? And so on. Jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. We're being trained. It was right here in Detroit. Prabhupada had some discussion with two Roman Catholic men, priests. And Prabhupada was emphasizing training, taking fourth class men, making them first class men through training. And they wanted to talk about what about the poor people and, you know, the paraplegics. And Prabhupada said, they're a minority. Let's speak about, we have the first class men, they'll take care of those people. Let's talk about making some first class men. And they wanted to talk about the other, you know, philanthropy and altruism and helping poor people, retarded and wheelchair people. And what about, you know, people in general, helping them from being victims of Kali Yuga to become first class men? And part of that is understanding the message of Bhagavad Gita and really getting it and applying it. Being attached to the duties that are assigned to us and not the other things. Okay. Well, in one of the persons I'm discussing this topic with is Giriraj Maharaj. And on Christmas Day, we're going to have a conversation. He's going to send me a file. We can write like a little essay and, you know, with scriptural references. And, you know, on the one hand, but on the other hand. He likes the topic too. So I'll share that with you all when it comes out. The goal is not just, okay, so now I have another piece of information, my information basket, but so we can become you know, more fixed and transcendent, more fixed on what Krishna wants to give us by making these teachings, presenting these teachings to Arjuna. Become attached to Krishna more, and less attached to the impermanent, fruitive activity tendencies. All right. To the Prabhupada ki
jai.
Prabhupada ki
jai.